I said, you don't understand. And it became my tag. And I had a picture. Everybody started wearing the cross color thing and everything. Once again, I always wanted to be different. So I had a blue jean thing that I did. This lady from Dallas, her name was Rita. She made it for me. She had a picture of me with my face on my thigh. And I had this white kind of shirt with some different check colors on my arm. Well, I put it on because, once again, I'm a comedian. And I remember the suit that I had for my brother was too big. And I went back to basics. I said, I'm a comedian. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the rest is history. I killed. That was really one of the pieces to my puzzle. My puzzle of success, rather. Got up in there, y'all, and everything just started really banging. People were dying to see me more by myself. And by myself, I did. Made a lot of people mad. Because what happened after that, I started back on the road. I was doing Milchineers in Chicago, Bernie Mac's Smooth Jazz and Comedy on the north side of Chicago, where I was introducing young acts. I had comedy, jazz, blues, poetry, and the whole nine yards. And we charged $3. Show started at 8 and we finished at 11. And we had a ball packed every night. Restaurant upstairs, I couldn't have set up a better place. Milchineers, I want to thank you for being understanding and allowing me to come down there and give me some place to work on my chops. Because as I said earlier, I couldn't go to the comedy clubs anymore. It got too big. I couldn't work. This was my safe haven. This was my place where I can go and do my thing. And once again, here we go. Everybody, y'all, was at Milchineers. Shaq, Jordan, all the Bulls, all the Bears, Magic Johnson, Johnny Gill, Shante Moore, everybody, Al Jarreau, my friend Phyllis Hyman was dying before she died. That was my buddy. Matter of fact, Phyllis Hyman get lots of props. She always used to holler at me and get mad and say I didn't do nothing. Phyllis Hyman believed in me, y'all, before a lot of people. That was my big audience. That was my audience that took me to the promised land. Let me tell you a story about that. Phyllis Hyman was in Los Angeles, and she was doing the show at the Universal Amphitheater. And she came to the Cotton Club and everything, and she says, this guy named Bernie Mac is phenomenal. You got to see him. She had my back. Well, they say, well, who is this Bernie Mac? And, you know, and I don't know, and shit. You know, we can get somebody here in Los Angeles. We got to fly him in. She fought for me. They didn't want me. Oh, I saw him on Def Jam the first time, and he cursed too much. You know, I don't like his style. That's what they told her. She said, let me tell you something. He's on it. Boy, they went to fly me in and everything. I had to be there that Friday. That Monday, we had a snowstorm. About 4 feet of snow. I didn't want to take no chance, y'all, to miss that show because she fought for me so hard. I jumped on Amtrak. I would never ride a train again unless I'm running from the law. That was the most uncomfortable ride I ever had in my life. And it smelled like pure D shit. They farted, smoked, snort, spit in the corner. Oh, man, I'm sitting up there. And if you don't have a bunk, you're in bad shape. That ride took me 3 days. We left Monday. We got there Thursday morning. When I got there, let me tell you something. I was in a slump position. I was bent over like I was sitting in a chair. My back was locked. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, I smell like shit. They had a little washroom that you had to wash up. You couldn't take a shower. You had your soap and stuff, but you only had no room to wash up. You had to make sure that you wash your ass and underneath your arm and brush your teeth. You had a little bitty sink. That washroom was tore up. It was, had tissue everywhere. It was awful. Well, I got to L.A. Nervous as hell. Never performed in 7,000 people. Keith Washington was hot at the time. He opened up for her. She told me, don't worry about the thing. I was so nervous because everybody doubted me. Everybody literally put me down. Phyllis Hyman became my friend. Not because of what she allowed me to do. It's because she knew I can do it. You know what? I ain't had too many people in my life that really believed in me. I really, really hadn't. But that's okay. She was one of them. And you know how you go back to the people who did? And the three people who did, they're dead. But I ever so got them buried inside my heart. Phyllis Hyman told me to go out there and kill him. I think I was doing 40 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, I went out there and I took that bull by the horn. I got respect that night. I can't remember what I did. That's how scared I was. So fear is good. Because fear helps you to think, make you make great decisions. Fear sometimes, man, can save your life. So ain't nothing wrong with being scared from time to time. Girl, I rode back home, man. I celebrated with Phyllis and everything, man. I'm telling you, it was a beautiful thing. Gorgeous. Show was great. I got back home, man. Rode that long-ass train ride again. Boy, let me tell you something. Cowboys ain't got shit on no train ride. I know that travel with that horse and eating beans out that tin plate, sipping on tough coffee, laying on hay, wiping your ass with leaves. Let me tell you something. That train is identical. That's some heavy bullshit. I have to use the word bullshit because that's the only way I can describe it. Next time you see me on the train, all you got to do is look at me when you walk past and say he running from the law. That's all you got to say. Well, back to Milchineers. Phyllis Hyman, my girl, she down there. And let me tell you something. It was a bang time. We rocked and rolled. Everybody, I'm telling you, everybody. It became the place to be. People were outside in the cold winter trying to get in. The place only hold 120 people. And I try to mix it up every week. Those who couldn't get in, they came back. I try to mix it up, you know? And that was the place where I got my chops, y'all. I sharpened my knife. And I put together another show. Midnight Mac. Went to HBO, pitched it. HBO bought it. The show was before its time. It was too heavy. It was too entertaining. I did four shows. Those shows, man, we came a percentage point behind the World Series. We beat everybody. Leno, David Letterman, Conan. We beat everybody. Politics took me off. Aubrey from HBO, he was allies with Brillstein and Gray. Brillstein and Gray was mad at me because I would not come back and do Def Jam Farewell. Russell Simmons was going out the air, and he wanted me to come and do another set. It was nothing against Russell Simmons, ladies and gentlemen. It was more about me. So let me explain something to you about the Mac Man. I don't do things for superficial reasons. I don't do things for dollars and cents. It was no disrespect to Russell Simmons, and I hate he couldn't understand that. It had something more to do with you. See, after my performance with Def Jam my second time around, when I did Kick It, You Don't Understand, that was the biggest thing for me in that position. To come back behind that and couldn't top that would have been devastating to me and my career. And I know that. See, you must know your limitation. You must know what you can and cannot do in order to succeed. You have to pick your fights. But they couldn't understand that because they didn't care about me. Only thing they cared about was themselves. So what are you going to do? You take a stand, or you let them put you somewhere that was going to kill you for the rest of your life. Had I done that, and I might not have been able to deliver the way I didn't think I could, I might not be sitting here talking to you all. My career might have been over. See, I love who I am. I love what I've become. And most of all, I have nothing but respect for those who have followed me from 1977. Up to 2003. I'm not going to change mine for nobody. I'm not going to put myself down to build somebody up. I owe my craft to my fans. I owe my craft to all the people who've been following me all those years. It had nothing to do with Russell, but they thought so. And all the following comedians followed them and beat me up and called me names and said I was this, that, and other. Because that's the way they was happy that Russell was mad at me. But eventually, like anything else, he'd get over it. And he did. See, once again, I ain't soliciting for no friends. I'm a comedian. I tell jokes. And if you get angry at that, well, that's your problem. Because personally speaking, I run my own race. What somebody else does is no concern to me. Will God take you? I can't be a part of that. Whatever God give you ain't got nothing to do with me. Only thing in America is I have to be my best. I have to be first honest with myself in order for me to be honest with you. Lying to you is an injustice. That's like lying to myself. And that's the worst thing you can do in your life. And I ain't gonna start that for nobody. So they sabotaged my show and went on the road. And people came to my show and they threw peanuts at me all night. And they heckled my show and the whole nine yards. But it was okay. I got over it. Got through it. So here I am, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking to you. Talking to you about something that I ain't never really shared with a whole lot of people. So I must really be comfortable that I'm able to sit down in this little booth and talk to you all, the whole world. Well, I ain't doing it for no applause. I ain't doing it for no sympathy, because sympathy ain't nothing but a sucker emotion. That's all it is. Whatever you decide to do, all you gotta do is make up your mind, go do it. But you can't hear the voices. See, the voices around you will tell you that you ain't. Because everybody wants you to be where they are. No one wants you to step out of that circle, that realm. If you do, oh, you think you're better than us. Well, unfortunately, you are. Jesus was better than a lot of people. Moses was too. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, so ain't nothing wrong with being better. I just thought I'd spit some venom to you. Well, I cover a lot of things. Oh, I forgot to tell you about Red Fox. Well, I used to go to Los Angeles. A friend of mine, she had tickets. I couldn't afford to go to L.A., but, you know, everybody kept telling me, if you want to be a comedian, you got to go to L.A. Well, I used to go and try to keep my ear close to the ground and things like that. And this was in the late 80s, right before I quit Wonder Bread and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I won the Miller Lite Comedy Search. I was getting kind of hot. And I went to Vegas at the Hyatt Seattle Hotel. It was a hotel at the end of the strip, all the way at the end. Red Fox used to literally own that hotel. He used to perform down there, and I was on the television where they show you who's performing in Vegas, and Red Fox. Oh, man, I said, I got to go see Red Fox. So we ordered tickets and everything, so we got there. It was a long line, and all of a sudden, a short white Jewish man. He had a very low-key voice. The crowd was kind of hostile. That was kind of strange for Vegas. They were pushing and shoving. He was a little bitty man, maybe about 5'3", five bald head, had glasses. He get back, please, ladies and gentlemen, get in line, you know. And my big ass, you know, I said, come on, Ronnie, come on. I said, everybody get back, please get back. Stop this kind of foolishness. Please get back. He said, thank you, sir. Thank you. The door opened. I thought I was helping him calm the crowd down. The crowd calmed down. And the door opened. This lady came out. And I caught it and kept it open. And I told Ron, I said, come on. She said, no, Ron. You know, Rhonda, she's too straight up. She said, no. I said, girl, come on. I grabbed her arm and we started running down the hall. Door closed behind us and we running. And she kept saying, we're going to get in trouble. I said, just come on. Now, to show you how dumb we are, we had tickets. So what the fuck was we sneaking for? I don't know. So we running and all of a sudden this door is wide open. We run past and guess what? Red Fox is sitting there. Head down, his head is inside his hand. And I said, that's Red Fox. She said, no, it ain't. I stepped back and I said, I knocked on the door and I said, excuse me, Mr. Fox. He looked at me like, yeah, how you doing? He said, boy, I'm sick. I'm real sick. Oh, my stomach killing me. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it tonight, but I got to do it. I said, Mr. Fox, I said, I don't mean to disturb you. I'm a comedian from Chicago. And now, I wasn't saying this so he could put me on. I was just introducing myself because I did the history of him being from St. Louis and living in Chicago, you know, then going to New York. So I had my homework down. Once again, I was a student of the game. He said, you're a comedian? I said, yes, sir. He said, you want to go up tonight? And I let you do 5 minutes. You know, 5 minutes. After 5 minutes, you get off. Now, here go Lorraine and Mary McCullough. Always be prepared. Say what you mean. Mean what you say. A liar is no good. Now, had I lied or made that up, I wasn't expecting him to come to me and say anything like that. What if I wasn't ready and gone upstage and made a fucking fool of myself? I never would might have been able to reach my potential. I was shocked and nervous at the same time. So I said, yes, sir, thank you. Rhonda looked at me. She was, her mouth dropped. You gonna do it. You gonna do it. I put my foot in my mouth. I said, yeah, I gotta do it. Slappy White walked in. He looked at me up and down, stared at me. Red Fox said, oh, this is a comedian from Chicago. What's your name? I said, Bernie Mac. Bernie Mac. I'm gonna give him 5 minutes. I want you to let him introduce him. Let him go up, Slappy. You know, and see what he got. Slappy looked at me. He gave me a look like, fuck you. He said, look, man, I don't know who you are, slick bastard. When I call your name, you go up and you get the fuck off. When I give you a light, you hurry up and you get off. You got me? I said, yes, sir. Well, showtime. They saw my wife to her seat. Another white comic, one of Red Fox buddy. Forget his name, but he was real. He was much nicer to me than Slappy. He said, go kill him, young man. And he winked at me. I could have ran. I could have ran out that door and never returned. I might have ran out and never saw Rhonda again. Slappy White went on stage and he said, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing? Welcome to the Red Fox Show. And he did a few little laughs and everything. He said, this next motherfucker, I don't know who he is. I never had the privilege of seeing him. I don't like him. Red Fox, you know, he'll pet a dog in a damn minute. Well, I'm going to bring this dog up. He's supposed to be a comedian from Chicago. Please give a warm applause for Sack Attack, Mac, Jack. Who gives a fuck? Just come on out here like that. Audience falling out. I go up. I'm nervous, man. I'm telling you, I'm inexperienced. I mean, because I'm caught off guard, y'all. And I'm talking to y'all because I ain't, you know, I'm just telling you like it is, okay? And I'm sitting up there, man. I'm doing my routine. I heard that first laugh. I kept going. I heard that second laugh. Then I heard a third laugh. And you see, if you can remember Red Fox, remember how he used to look at Lamont when Lamont and him was, you know, together on the same page? He looked at Slappy and he winked at him. Like he was so happy for me. He said, go, boy, go. Red Fox gave me the finger to keep going. Because I was so nervous, although the last was coming, I couldn't wait to get off that damn stage. Let me tell you something, that 5 minutes felt like an hour. Red Fox kept telling me to go on, go on. Y'all, when I got through performing, I did 15 minutes. Though people was hollering and screaming and clapping, I was in shock. I was too in shock to feel good. Red Fox patted me on the back, Slappy White walked right past me and gave me a side eye and told the mic, he said, the motherfucker did good, didn't he? He said, if he wasn't, I was going to shoot his ass. He said, Red, don't bring nobody else up here. Last week, Red brought his mother. She been dead for 30-something years. Oh, man, he was funny. He was funny. Red Fox looked at me and he said, You did good. You did good. And it was ironic, because the Miller Lite Comedy Search was held in Chicago, and Red Fox started it. 87, 88, 89, and the winner would go to Las Vegas and open up for him. 89 was when I did it. In 1990, the comedian submitted my name for the Miller Lite Comedy Search, and Red Fox didn't do it anymore. And I won it. And the prize was $3,000, in which I put my daughter's name for college, the biggest payday of my life. You figure it out. I told you about my daughter. I wanted a boy, but when I saw my daughter, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, some people, you know, don't want to be parents. My mother used to always tell me, I ain't here to be no popularity contest. To my mother and my grandmother, I want to say thank you, really, for being the man and the woman of my life. And being a parent. See, parents don't want to be parents no more. They want to be friends, buddies. My grandmother told me the truth. My mother died when I was 15, but she put so much knowledge in my head, it was unbelievable. She was strong. She used to tell you, I ain't here to be liked. I'm here to save your life. And that's why I took a page out of my grandmother and my mother's book in terms of the raising of my daughter. My daughter thought I was so hard on her. But my daughter has never, her and I have never had a problem in terms of where we stood with one another. Now she respects me more than ever now that she's a woman, she's married, she got a husband, and she told me, man, 3 months ago, prior to me doing this voiceover, that she really truly appreciated me being the father that I was. Because she thought I was hard on her. Because we grew up with, and I instilled it in her, don't tell me what they doing. They will get your ass whooped in my house. They doing it. Everybody else doing it. My grandmother couldn't stand that. She would slap you right in the mouth. And I mean, she was so animated about it, she would tell you, don't tell me what everybody else is doing. You're not everybody else. Grandma, I thank you for that. Because if without that, I wouldn't be who I am. Standing up and being a man and believing in something and having honor back. I gave that to my daughter. And you know what? She's a replica of me. My daughter, she did it. I can't take no credit. Having one child, you know, it might be a little easier than being a parent in two and three. Because now you're dealing with three personalities versus one. But I say this, I am proud I had the strength and the tutelage in the background to have Mary, Eleanor McCullough, and Lorraine McCullough in my life. Because my daughter would not have turned out to be the way she is today. I did not do it. I can't take credit for something that I didn't do. When you see my daughter, you see her grandmother and her great-grandmother. I just passed the baton. So I thank you for your ear. I thank you for your time. I hope you enjoy me telling my story because it came from my heart. It's not about sales. It's about truth. And that's how I became the Mac Man. All the movies, all the stand-up, I give my thanks to the people. Hollywood didn't make you. Hollywood didn't make me. But I have to be honest with all the people who's listening. You all made me. Television show is my life. All the trials and tribulation prior to that, I give you my life. So once again, I am extremely grateful for everything that's in my life, I'm able to share it with all of you all out there. So thank you. From the Mac Man, Bernie Mac.
We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.